This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the crumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related. Featuring myself and my co-host, the Hardcastle McCormick of Objective-C, I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 44. It's Saturday, April 6, 2013, and our topic this week is editor round-tripping. That's the reaction I get.
I was more excited than you'd give me credit for.
Fair enough. Okay, so I don't think we have any follow-up, or FU, as they say, for this week, although it sounds like we might have some for next week, so everybody can look forward to that. Yes? All right. So I'll get started. And I am going to invoke the Syracuse curse by saying, I think this is going to be a shorter show, so we'll see how that goes.
You know, not that I don't love our podcast, but, you know, we really overdue for a shorter show.
We overdue? So
we're overdue for
overdue, a shorter show. Yeah, I think, our shows have been more like in the 50, 55-minute range. And
Yeah.
And so why don't we talk about having a shorter show a little more so we can, Okay. So this topic started, as do many of my topics, with a tweet or with a series of tweets. And as far as I can remember, I don't remember the exact tweets, and I'm certainly not going to go look for them, but it was someone, two people talking about sharing code, swapping code back and forth, and one of them joked, if I'm remembering it correctly, that it didn't matter what format it was, I'll just have sort of this hypothetical code reformatting editor, you know, change it around before I work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got me thinking about, you know, that hypothetical code reformatting editor. What would that involve? Is it possible? Is it interesting? I think it's sort of interesting to talk about anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So so a couple of things then. What is round tripping then? Wolf, give a what's your
good, great timing on that meow. That was high quality.
I see my cat has an opinion. what do you think of when you hear the word round tripping, or the phrase round tripping?
Well, round tripping is kind of like it really reminds me of kind of the WYSIWYG HTML editors versus the textual editors, and also I guess kind of maybe the WordPerfect style tag markup type stuff versus what you see is what you get type stuff, which is odd because, you know, like Word is famous for kind of like corrupting its documents, where yes. where it's like internally, you know, it stores things as ranges of attributes, but you can never actually get in there to fix it when you've made mistakes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Word will eventually eat itself, and or at least eat your document.
Right.
And I mean, at least with things like RTF or HTML, is that you can actually, you know, it's terrible, terrible formats, but at least you can get your hands in there and fix the bloody tags.
Right. Well, certainly, if you look at Wikipedia, it's got a round trip engineering topic that I'll put in the show notes, which is more general purpose than what I'm going to talk about. And it's interesting because one of the things they talk about is UML models,
mm-hmm.
as one thing that you can you can use as a way to round trip data from source code to a UML model and then back. And
yeah, that was the mid '90s holy grail.
Yes, and actually, so let's see. So I worked on the class modeling tool, the late and as far as I can tell, unlamented class modeling tool for Xcode 3. And one of the things about its implementation, which no one would otherwise have any reason to know, is that the implementation was very UML-based. The code was set up to be basically the basis of a UML editor.
Mm.
And by the time I got to it, that would have been hard to rip out, but I really wished I could have, because there's certainly very little use in the Xcode as currently envisioned for this sort of very enterprisey UML editing support.
Was it just like too much conceptual baggage?
It was a huge amount of conceptual baggage. I mean, okay. UML. Do you know UML at all?
I believe I read a book on it.
Yes. So did I for the project. It represents things in a very generic way that is often quite complex for a C-based language, in my mind. So that's the last we'll be talking about UML.
Or for the show or for the rest of the HKs?
I'm excising it from my mind. So in any case, very loose definition would be when you take the source code, your source code, your headers, .m, .c, .cpp, et cetera files, and you turn it into a format that separates the essential code logic from the textual formatting. And we'll talk about this separate data format in a bit. And then from that, you regenerate new source code and header files from that format in a way that then they may have new formatting. Mm-hmm. But all the essentials are maintained. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing. That's certainly the kind of thing that they were talking about in the tweets, and that's the kind of thing that I'm going to be talking about. And so, what kind of things could you change? Could you make different from the initial version of the text files to the second version? Well, it's mostly the kind of things that we talked about in the Tabs and Spaces of Outrageous Fortune episode from a while ago. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. The kind of things that you can do with Uncrustify. And in my episode, I was very careful to only talk about space formatting, exactly how many spaces, how many turns you put in. But in fact, you can do much more than just that with Uncrustify and in general with code formatting. Certainly there's the KNR style braces versus Allman style, et cetera. There's how many spaces you use for indenting, but there's also whether to put braces around a single line of code and if else block, for example, for a while block or anything like that. You could also, with this theoretical editor, do things like reorder methods or put methods in particular kind of sections of the file. So for example, when I organize a file which has a bunch of methods in a class, I will split them out into, for example, standard methods, methods where you're overriding apt-get methods or UIKit methods, public methods, private methods, all these sort of ways that I can say, well, instead of looking at an undifferentiated mass of 100 methods, I will look at, sort of 25, 25, 25. Uh-huh. And in theory, you could have this editor take methods which are in an arbitrary order and spit them back out in these sections. If you wanted to do that, like something like that, you could put category methods in their own files with very specifically patterned file names. If you wanted to do that, that would be different than what someone else would do. And so you could organize things in these very specific, very peculiar ways without imposing those ways on everyone else who wants to edit those files or browse those files. So, good so far?
Yeah.
All right. So that's the concept. And so, okay, so when I say you take the source code file and you turn it into this essential code logic format, what is that format? Well, we've already talked about how I would tend to not recommend using UML for it. Mm-hmm. The one that I've seen used in these sorts of tools is ASTs, or abstract syntax trees. And I'm assuming, should we assume most people know what abstract syntax trees are?
I think it would be worth covering it.
Okay, so I've got a pretty rough and ready definition. I'll also put what it says about abstract syntax trees in Wikipedia into the show notes. And what they say here is a tree is obviously a series of nodes arranged in a hierarchical order. Each node of the tree denotes a construct occurring in the source code I'm reading here. The syntax is abstract in not representing every detail appearing in the real syntax. For example, grouping parentheses are implicit in the tree structure. You know what? Forget that. Okay, so the idea being, like, for example, if you look at a method and it's got a three statements in it, it's got int A as one line, int B, int A equals 10, let's say, int B equals 20, and then the third one is return A plus B. In the abstract syntax trees, you're going to have one node for the whole method, which will then say some things about the method. And then in the children of the tree, you'll have a thing which represents the code block. And then under that node, you'll have the children representing each of the statements at the top level of the code block. So you'd have you know, one representing the declaration of A, one representing the declaration of B, and one representing the return statement. And what, so again, good so far, I think?
Yeah.
If it's a declaration of something, it will have what type it is, and that actually, that can actually get quite interesting in in C-based languages. So for example, a method, Objective-C method, the type will be the whole method name, you know, foo, colon, bar, colon, bas, colon. Even though they're not all contiguous in the source code, which can be interesting. You can have the types for function pointers, which are very custom, depending on the exact function pointer. All these things. Now, but these nodes are very simple. What really struck me when I started using them was how incredibly simple they are. They really do just have a little tiny bit of information. They got the name, they got the type, and they don't have anything more about the type. Like the reason why things like compilers will say, well, I haven't seen this type yet, you haven't declared this type yet, is because when they're reading through these ASTs, all they know about the type is the string. That's it. So lots more meaning is put into these things afterwards by the compiler or inferred or anything after they're made. And they're abstract. Let's see, I did say why they were abstract. But what's interesting is, yes, so they have the essential information that you need to compile the file, and which is also probably what we would consider to be what's needed as the essential code logic of the file. So that part is good. Now, if you wanted to use, but the problem is, while they have that, they don't have anything else. And that's intentional. I was actually talking with someone from the Clang team at one point, and they said, you know, they're not going to put anything more into the ASTs that, for example, Clang creates, because parsing out more data, putting more data into these things, making them larger, making them longer to load, to build, would slow down compilation.
Oh, really? That's interesting that I wouldn't have suspected so much a performance concern as more of a separation of concerns concern.
Well, you know, I bet it's both. I bet it's a bunch of things. But no, that's definitely a consideration. Well, you know, Clang, when you looked at the presentations for Clang the first couple of years, and probably they still do it in WWDC, you know, there's always a performance chart over GCC. It was especially important, I think, at the beginning that they just really blow GCC out of the water.
Well, it's also the kind of the code warrior shadow, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, certainly. Yeah. Xcode has always been slow compiling, and they really wanted to change that. So, but because there's none of that rest of that data in there, well, that might be a problem. So let's look at the other possibility. Which instead of abstract syntax trees, there's concrete syntax trees, which apparently isn't a phrase that people use very often. I guess they mostly use parse trees as the name for it. Now, I haven't used these much at all myself, but the theory, as I understand it, is that they don't throw away any of the textual information. So they'll remember where the braces are. I don't know if they'll remember comments, but I'm assuming they might. And so, you know, it feels like it's kind of an all or nothing. Well, either you treat the formatting information as completely extraneous, or you build it right in with everything else. Mm-hmm. At least in the conceptual, the way that these things are theorized, and that's a problem, right? Because what you want to be able to do is separate the essential from the formatting, but not throw away either one and not intermingle them. So you really kind of need like an AST plus that will keep the logic safe, but remembers everything else as well. And so, I mean, that should be possible, right? You'd need, like, for example, if you wanted to do this with Clang, you would need to write your own logic that would take that extra information and put it in there. And then, so now I wanted to kind of go over what that might involve for some specific cases, because I think you really need to get down into the nitty gritty with this stuff to see how well it's going to work. So I think comments are a good example of this. And what's interesting about comments, when I was thinking about it for this episode, is whereas your code needs to, and there's many different ways you can format your code, but in the end, it does have to compile. It does have to follow a very specific set of machine-determined requirements. in order for it to be considered valid, in order for it to make sense. Whereas comments, since they're only for human eyes, since they're not validated by anything, you can write comments that don't make any logical sense. And what I mean by this is, what I mean mostly by this, I guess, is you can write comments which don't seem to refer to anything. And that's going to be a problem, because when you're trying to make these AST plus data piece objects, for let's call them, one of the things that you're going to need to do is figure out where to put the comments in the newly generated code.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you need to know what they were intended to address,
mm-hmm.
what they're pointed at. Now, one thing I remember from an AppKit header from a while ago is that there was one of these headers where you got a whole list of method decorations, and below each of them was the comment for the method. And so it was, you know, maybe 5, 10, I don't know exactly how many, but it was noticeable that there were a lot of them, and there were comments below them. And that's unusual, right? Because most of the time, if you have a comment that's meant for a header, it's going to be above it.
Right.
And sometimes there might be comments that are after it. But you really only got pretty much three options there. Above, after, below. You can't really, well, you can put it before, I guess. I've never seen anybody do that. But the trouble with then with therefore saying, well, you can have them in any of those spots, is the editor that's supposed to turn your text file into this AST plus then has to figure out what you mean. And there are enough edge cases that I don't think it can in a general purpose way. So let's say you had 10 method decorations. And if you had 10 comments above each one of them, then the editor could figure it out pretty easily. Because it could say, well, there's something above each one of them, then therefore it's probably above, and then you'll take it. If there were 10 methods where there were comments below, then it could figure it out as well. It could say, okay, they're below, you know, because each one of them has one below. The very top one doesn't have one above it. Okay, we'll figure that out. We'll assume that. Okay, well, what if you had what I was thinking of referring to as a Dagwood sandwich of methods and comments, in that there is a method decoration at the top, and there's a method decoration at the bottom, and in between there's just back and forth, comment, method, comment, method, comment, method.
Mm-hmm.
What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, you can totally see that when, like, that's between, like, data source declarations and delegate declarations. Heuristically, it'd be very difficult to disambiguate.
Right, and it's not that, well, okay, I'm not writing a complex enough editor. If I just write a complex enough editor, I can figure it out. No, there's no way for a machine to figure it out.
Well, in a C-based language.
Right, in a C-based language. Yeah, so good point. So, for example, you know, you might say, well, if you can find some reference to the method name or the method argument name, something in there, you know, just give me something. What if you don't?
Yeah, so, you're definitely going to increase the probability of success, but you're just that. I mean, it's not a slam dunk.
Right, well, and what's interesting for me is I thought I had seen this in AppKit. And so I went back in the 10.8 headers, and I looked for it. And what was very interesting to me was that it looks like somebody has gone through all the headers in AppKit and just regularized the heck out of just about all the ones I could look at. AppKit Foundation, all of the sort of the mishmash that I used to see has all been transformed into C-style comments instead of C++-style comments where it's one per line, right? No, this is multi-line comments, always above, and always separated from the preceding method decoration by one line. So somebody has gone through and made that a little bit more machine-like. There actually still are comments below, but they're always indented by a tab.
Interesting.
So, it is like somebody, it feels like somebody was kind of thinking through that idea. And so,
well, I know that there was in the old-style Mac toolbox days, that there was an era where the headers were just, written, there was this iMacintosh, and there was, the headers were written from the assembly there and given and giving Pascal declarations, and then they ported it out to C headers. Mm-hmm. And that was all this one-off kind of whatever engineer was working at the time. And there was this big effort in Apple to actually, if my understanding is correct, is that they actually ended up with some sort of database, I want to say a HyperCard database, that had like all every single toolbox call in it. And then they could hit a click a button HyperCard, and it would spew out from the database. It would spew out the source files.
Yeah, so I think
I don't know if Cocoa has reached that point yet.
I mean, that's the thing. It feels like they
probably not HyperCard,
not HyperCard, but it feels like, and it still doesn't necessarily feel like you can still see great style differences between headers. Like some headers have paragraphs of comments for each method. And some have just a little tiny bit, and some have none. So I'm not sure exactly what that means, but that's but it still doesn't feel like they've completely regularized everything for the push of a button, unless that system has a lot more capacity for variation. Mm-hmm. Although still, of course, it's still much more of an easy thing to put into a machine, to put into a program, than what we're talking about.
Right.
So one of the other difficulties of this sort of round-tripping is one-off formatting. So what if you do something that, so let's say you have this set of rules which you would normally use to translate your code into the essential code logic format. But then sometimes you don't follow those rules. Sometimes you do something else. So normally you put a comment above a local variable declaration, for example. But in one case, you add it to the right. And so what are we supposed to do about that? Well, your initial translator could probably figure that out. Okay, this the one to the right is also a comment for this variable decoration. But then what if you want to somebody makes a change then in their code, and so their code is different. Like their code has the comment above, for example, and they change that function, and then they want to spit it back out that changed source code file. Well, unless you've sort of have an exponential notation in those ASTs and AST plus that you're generating to say, well, in this one case, we did it a little differently, then what you're going to get in your version of the source code, let's say your version of the formatting is what goes into your source control system. Well, then you're going to get this file, which has an extraneous change to it. It'll have the meaningful changes from your coworker, and then it will also have this other change because when you originally wrote the code, you didn't follow your own rules. And this can also be the case for extraneous punctuation, not extraneous punctuation, extraneous spaces, or just different indentation, things like that. The things which you, if you're going to do, you probably do, because you want them to be one-offs. You want them to give a different emphasis to the code or show that it's special or that sort of thing. Or it may just be that you made a mistake. And you know, you didn't follow the rules that one time because you know, you were coding quickly or whatever.
Or a cat got on the keyboard.
A cat got on the keyboard. Yeah, that never happens. And there's a lot of these. And that's, you know, you come down to it, SEM is actually the real problem here. Because if you didn't care that there were extra changes, because you wouldn't really see them that often, that would be one thing. But you don't necessarily want to check in a lot of these changes, because then you've got a then you're going to have a problem with weeding out a lot of unmeaningful changes from your meaningful changes. Mm-hmm. So what do you do about this? Is there any way to fix this? Is there any way to make this right? Well, I mean, you could just give up, and that's what most people do. Like, I remember I actually had a conversation with a colleague. It was not an official conversation. No one should get excited. But a couple of my you know, because when you're working on Xcode, you know, you tend to think about these things. And we kind of, you know, we kind of talk through, well, could we do this? Is this a possibility? And I was arguing that you couldn't, because there were a lot of these edge cases. And, you know, certainly while I was there, there was never any, we never shipped anything that would do this sort of thing. And who knows, maybe they're planning on doing it. But you know what, I would kind of doubt it, that they would do it for Xcode. I don't think anyone else has necessarily done this. As far as I know, you know, like Visual Studio doesn't have anything like this. Eclipse doesn't have anything like this. Of course, someone could write a plugin for Eclipse to do it, but I haven't heard of anything kind of really taking off about it. When I looked up editor round tripping in Google, I didn't find any of the standard names for editors where this kind of feature was mentioned. There were a couple editors and things that mentioned about it. I've forgotten the name of it. Something foo? No. But certainly there was nothing large scale, nothing that we would have heard of that's in use by people we know. But the other option, it seems to me the other option would be to live with more regimented code. If you've decided you want the SCM support to work properly and you can't, you know, use some sort of quantum logic, I don't know what you would use, some sort of mind-reading logic that would give you all the answers and be able to hold all of this information, you could just assume that all those special cases that I just mentioned, you know, your utility just paves over them. Okay, you didn't follow those rules, you know, screw you. You know, we're gonna change your code to be what it really should be, or just obliterate your idiosyncratic stuff. And if everybody kind of gets used to that, especially if you were to use this round-tripping code to round-trip your own code before you check it in, then it should probably work, right? Because then there shouldn't be any extraneous changes, because both your code and everyone else's code always gets reformatted according to the rules. Now, I'm not actually sure if this would even work, because you could use a tool like Uncrustify to format your code, to figure out the formatting rules. But when I was using Uncrustify myself one time, it actually didn't cover everything. You know, Uncrustify has hundreds of options. Well, maybe not hundreds, lots and lots of options. Anyway, I'd never counted exactly how many there were.
It feels like hundreds.
It feels like hundreds. But,
or at least 800.
But there were definitely cases where, okay, this one little extra case that I was trying to, you know, solve or change or whatever, it didn't cover it. It didn't have everything. So you could keep adding stuff to it until you have most of what you need. And again, that would get you through, what, like 90, 95% of the cases. But it still might not have everything. But okay, let's say you spend extra work on Uncrustify, on your tool, get all the cases that you're likely to use, and you can do it. Now you can do it. Now you can have your code in one format and have someone else in their format, and each one use it entirely on their own and do it that way. The trouble I see with that approach is that if you're stripping out all the idiosyncrasies, all the character from my code and your code and everyone's code, if you can get everyone on your team to agree to that, you can probably just get them to agree to use one format. Like if you're already stamping out all the idiosyncrasy, then why not just have everybody use the same format to begin with? And then you don't even need the tool. So you don't need that extra step before you check stuff in. So yeah, so that's that's my, as usual, quite bubbly, enthusiastic take on this sort of thing. Any thoughts there, Wolf?
Yeah, so I have used Eclipse, and one of the things that impressed me with Eclipse in the beginning was that it had the reformat code option. And
oh, yeah?
This was a feature I tried out, and this was in the bad old days of Project Builder and PBX. And so Eclipse was definitely way ahead of Project Builder at this time. So it was this is obviously a technology from the future, at least. Well, not the small talk future, you know, the more immediate future. Well, the present, maybe. Maybe the past. But anyway, less of the past than PBX was. Anyway. And I was really impressed with it. The formatting in terms of how it could reformat the code was pretty much, granted, it was, you know, they had a special case where this had to deal with Java. And it worked out pretty much beautifully, except for one thing. And the one thing that I had to disable and I'll let it touch was vertical spacing, is what I discovered. That I apparently embed a lot of like semantic knowledge in terms of how I group chunks of code vertically. And it would just love to swallow up all those seemingly extra spaces in between the chunks of code.
So you just mean extra lines that you were adding?
Yeah, this extra lines, yeah.
Yeah, and they would take those out.
It would take those out. And mm-hmm. there was a few. I seem to remember there was a checkbox that I could disable that, where it would try to remove those so-called extraneous lines. But that was like where it fell down in my case. And I have to imagine that, and that's what I ran into. But I think you're right. There are a bunch of probably edge cases like that. If that one bit me, there's probably a bunch of other ones hiding. But I am really intrigued with your idea of having kind of like this tool that could take the source code you're about to check in, run it through the normalizer, and then present it to you as a diff, and make it very apparent when you're violating the own rules. But again, I'm also, like you, concerned about the edge cases scenario there. And I don't know if you actually can encode every last thing, even something that's, supposedly so set in stone as a programming language, right? You don't think there's this much poetic expression you can put into a source code text file. But I guess all you have to do is like look at the International Obfuscated C contest. You see a man, when you have a C source file that's, shaped like the Death Star, that will, print itself out. It's obviously there's a, we don't see it in day to day, but there's a bunch of things to think about there that aren't obvious.
Well, it's really, again, I think comments are going to be the real killer. And I would almost put your vertical spacing as a kind of comment. I mean, it isn't mm-hmm. really, but it's your way of trying to
sure.
add extra stuff in there that isn't there in the code. I mean, what's interesting, right? Like a for loop, you wouldn't think there's that much formatting in a for loop. Mm-hmm. But virtually everywhere where there's a space where there doesn't need to be, or there isn't a space where there could be, mm-hmm. is a choice. It's a formatting choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't, you could do it differently if you wanted. And if you're really stripping out all that stuff from your source code, and then you're reintroducing it according to a particular rule, then you've really got to decide that you are happy with, the exact spacing that the tool is providing you. If you could, in theory, if this tool worked for you, then have all the spacing you wanted on your own, as long as it always followed the same rules. Mm-hmm. And then you could say, well, yeah, I want, what are some things you could do? Like spaces, one person says no spaces after the beginning paren before the closing paren. Another person says, yes, I want spaces there in those two. And as long as you always follow that, then you can have the rewriting tool take care of that and make sure that it has those things properly. But then comments are just so crazy with that because, right. you say, let's say, I always put my comments at the end of the line for, let's say, a declaration of, mm-hmm. of a variable. Well, in someone else who puts it before the line and then says, well, now I want a two-line comment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so then how do you translate that back into the thing at the end of the line now?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have two lines of comments, but they're both, the first one is after the line and the second one is sort of aligned with the one at the end of the line previously? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That would sort of work, but then what if the person writing it at the beginning of the line, writing a new comment, just assumes that the comments can be as long as the entire width of the editor?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, when you put them at the end of the line, well, they can't be. Anymore. Do you have a rule about how lines are split up in your comments? Yeah. I mean, it can get pretty silly.
Yeah, it's like a cursive can of worms.
Yes. But it's the sort of thing where, somebody's going to make you deal with that eventually. Mm-hmm. Unless you've got sort of the mentality, unless you've got a culture which says, no, don't do that. Like I just tweeted recently about QA engineers, where I said, the way to become a QA engineer is to be a naughty child. Mm-hmm. Where when people say, don't do that, don't touch that, you're like, no, I'm going to touch that. I'm going to do whatever. And so, kind of the way to be a happy engineer under the system is not to be the naughty child and to say, okay, you're giving me the set of arbitrary rules. I'm going to follow them. So.
Yeah, the other thing that came to mind is that the importance of patterns, and it's kind of, the standard rule is, if you're in a project and you go to add a method, you make your code look like the rest of the code. Even right. if you disagree with it, that's a mature, professional thing to do. And so that's because we recognize that these patterns are powerful, that when you look at a source a source file that when you see it's all following the same pattern, it's kind of, you almost can like this mental like sigh of relief that you're like, okay, I these are the rules of the source code. And when something stands out, even that for loop that has that extra space somewhere, it doesn't follow the pattern. And it kind of sets off the alarm bell. Like, why is this one different from all the rest? Was it just because, you know, some guy wrote a patch that had this one line change and he didn't notice that it didn't follow the pattern? Or is this piece of code a little bit tricky? And as a professional programmer, tricky code should set off all your alarms.
Yep.
And so code that doesn't follow the pattern, it sets off alarms that it could be tricky, but also it's a way to warn fellow programmers that this code is tricky. So it's like, so it's not strictly a comment. It is breaking a pattern.
Right. Right. And is it worth mowing down all of that idiosyncrasy for the sake of the benefits that I've been discussing, the ability to use your own format? And I would tend to say no. It would be curious what other people might say, you know,
but that does it for me. I know we're trying to do a shorter show, but here we are, 36 minutes.
Yeah, we're doing really well. One last thing I'll say is it's interesting in code where there is no necessarily strong formatting, but I know I'm kind of taking it over for the immediate future. It's my project. It can actually be kind of fun and useful for me to impose my stamp of the formatting that I want to use for this whole project.
Are you urinating on the code, metaphorically?
Oh my god. Now I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head. Well, but it shows where you've been in a very easy way. Like, you can say, oh yeah, I've changed this method. I've edited this method, because now it looks like the rest of the code instead of looking like the old code. It's not necessarily something that I would do it's not something I would do if I were working with a lot of other people on the same code base, but if it's just me, and I know that I'm eventually going to get around to changing the format to be the format that I use overall, doing it piecemeal has its advantages sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, but my God, now I'm going to think about.
Well, if you'd prefer, you just can kind of think about it as putting your scent on the code.
Yes, much better. All right, it's time to go. Please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes. Oh God, I can't get that in my head. For show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And you can find us individually on Twitter, me, A. Pontius, APONTIOUS, and also on app.net. And Wolf, his last name, Wrench, that's the word rent, RENT, plus Z, plus SCH. And we'll see you next time.